All right. So first of all, thank you very much for inviting me to this conference to present the, let's say, the European facility and the work we've done trying to design this long baseline experiment. Usually it's quite hard to follow a good speaker, and that's the case. It's even harder to follow a very good comment, which was made by someone right in front here, Mr. Leonard. So yes, exactly, this question, the baseline, I don't really want to go into it. I think Sylvia is going to be giving the talk on the actual physics of LBNO and how we've treated, if you like, our sensitivity analysis. So I'll really focus on the facility, what we've done on the facility. So that is the outline. All right, we've got a hockey stick or bamboo stick. I'll select the bamboo stick. OK. So I'll talk a little bit. We've seen the previous talk really go into the detail of the, let's say, oscillation probability and so on. I'll just present a couple of plots on that. I want to focus on the actual facility, so the beam optimization that we carried out. Also the near detector, which is different to the approach that was taken for the LBNE. I'll talk a little bit about the far detector. I think Milin is going to be talking quite a lot about liquid argon, the pros and cons, and so on. And I also want to have a few slides on the LBNO demonstrator, which is the way forward, at least in Europe, in the near term. All right, so the LBNO present status is this one. I'll just read it out to you. It's going to be a little bit tedious, possibly, but there you go. After several years of R&D, and several years is about a decade, fairly detailed European community-funded studies about this level of investment, 17 million euros, we have a clear end-to-end power solution for LBNO. So this is an argon TPC experiment capable of doing these things, so determining mass hierarchy at 5 sigma over about 4-year exposure with a 20 kiloton detector, and covering the CP violation phase at that level at 3 sigma and that level at 5 sigma. So 80% at 3 sigma and 65% at 5 sigma. So the deep underground site, so that's really a feature of this site, and I'll go into that a little bit later, offers a comprehensive program also for atmospheric and astrophysics neutrino detection and proton decay searches. I won't go into the detail of that. So we have a conceptual design report that is published. It's available publicly. This was developed in quite a lot of detail with industrial partners. So I'll cover a little bit of that also. And finally, then this WA105, which is a project to build a double-phase liquid argon prototype sited at CERN and seeing charged particle beams. So I'll try and motivate that also. We have this, what we consider to be a steady path, if you like, to where we are at now, which is essentially a very conceptual phase at the beginning, and sort of around 2003 or so, with this GLACIER concept, the giant liquid argon chart imaging experiment concept. That was followed up by this Laguna design study, which is a framework FP7 design study in Europe covering three detector technologies, so water Cherenkov, liquid argon, and liquid scintillator technologies at 7 different European sites. And the following phase, the phase which just finished actually in August of this year, is this Laguna LBNO phase. So, and that included 300 members and ended up with a fully engineered conceptual design for liquid argon, liquid scintillator, and water Cherenkov detectors. One important point of this particular design study is that we focused on one of the sites, and so extensive site investigations were carried out at this mine in Finland, and that was actually a Finnish contribution to the project. So, within Europe, then, we've basically submitted a letter of intent, and that is for a long baseline neutrino experiment. I think I've got the reference here. Again, that can be downloaded and consulted with this number of authors and institutes. So, and since about last year, we've been discussing this WA105 experiment, which is still under discussion officially, but it's started unofficially. So that is the expression of interest. And now I'd just like to spend two slides on these oscillation probabilities, showing what you get as a function, so the probabilities as a function of neutrino energy. So I'm not looking at L over E, I'm just looking at E here. Essentially looking at different potential values of delta CP. So the two CP conserving cases, zero and pi, these two cases here. To show you that,
What L?
This is for 2,000, obviously, 2,300 kilometers. So showing essentially that you really have, you can clearly distinguish between the first and second oscillation maxima, which is situated between 3 and 6 and 1 and 2, basically, at 2,300 kilometers. So, and for the normal and inverted hierarchies. So you can really clearly see different, very clear pattern, which is different and allows you to have improved sensitivity, well, to have good sensitivities for mass hierarchy, certainly at these very long baselines. All right, so the LBNO experimental strategy is the following, essentially the long baseline, first point. So Sylvia will really go into quite a lot of detail on that. The L over ES oscillations of the first and second maxima, a phased experiment. So we start with a 20 kiloton detector, and the idea is to go to a 70 kiloton detector, so follow the 20 by a 50 kiloton detector to have a total of 70 kilotons. Two complementary long baseline experiments. So this is not really talked about very much, but we also studied a second beam from Protvino in Russia, pointing to Piasalmi, and at basically measuring news versus anti-news, and then these two phases that I mentioned before. That's the beam from Protvino. So on this little map, you basically see CERN here sending its beam with these characteristics of 400. This is the first, let's say, phase for the CERN beam, an SPS beam, so 400 GeV protons on a target, 700, and actually that's 750 kilowatts. Should update that. And the Protvino beam, which has this characteristics, 70 GeV protons at 450 kilowatts. So then what you obtain with the CERN beam can be essentially plotted on this plot of essentially entries versus reconstructed neutrino energy. And you basically, you can follow the unoscillated case here versus the nu mu to nu mu disappearance, so oscillations. And the number of events are shown there. For the electron-like charge current sample, you have these essential components. So we really have taken all of these into consideration when we are essentially looking at the sensitivities. And again, Sylvia will be covering this in her talk, so I'm not going to be spending too much time on this. So the Laguna LBNO study cases basically looked at three different sites. So Umbria, Canfranc, and Piasalmi. I'll be focusing on Piasalmi. So why did we get attracted by this mine? It is one of the deepest mines in Europe, so roughly 1.5 kilometers deep. It's a very modern mine. It has various access possibilities, a lift and a road, basically, going down to the lowest point. The operation time is still 4 to 5 years with currently known ore reserves, so that it's scheduled to essentially close its mining activities, at least in 2018. It has one of the lowest reactor neutrino backgrounds in Europe. And as I mentioned before, extensive site investigations were carried out of this particular mine. So it really has some pretty good properties. When you're trying to design, for example, caverns at this sort of depth, the rock is excellent. It has excellent strength. And this was all measured and confirmed. Essentially, looking now at CERN here, to Pyesalmi. The distance then, as mentioned before, is 2,300 roughly kilometers. The deepest point along the beamline is that 103.8 kilometers. There's abundant geophysical data available, and the remaining uncertainty basically has a very small effect on the sensitivities. So now I'd like to talk a little bit, I've been through the introduction, I'd like to talk a little bit about the beam optimization. So this has been addressed a little bit in the previous talk. That's something that we focused on a little bit. So we had a person, a postdoc, working full-time for 2.5 years, roughly, essentially looking at how to optimize the LBNO beam with that baseline in mind, and focusing on optimizing the event rates at the first and second oscillation maxima. So you really look at the, he essentially focused on the yield of the parent pions, looking at essentially the fact that you have greater than 95% of all neutrinos which come from these pions, a small fraction come from kaons and so on. So the first oscillation maximum that he really was focusing on is in this region, 3 to 6 GeV. And in this particular region, the parent pion is emitted from the target between 0 and 0.1 rad, with the most probable angle of that, 27 millirad, so it's really pointing in the forward direction compared to, let's say, a broader beam at the lower baseline. And then the second oscillation maximum, essentially in this region, 1 to 2 GeV, we have the parent pion, which is, as you might expect, emitted with a broader angle. And so these are the parameters that he basically took into consideration when trying to optimize his beam. So essentially some plots showing in arbitrary units the production energy, if you like, of the new mu parent with different values or different configurations of the horn. So perfect focusing, horn plus reflector, and no focusing. Now, concerning the actual beam from CERN, two scenarios were explored. The, let's say, the baseline beam, which is the SPS beam at 400 GeV with these parameters, 750 kilowatt beam power, and also some upgrade to the CERN accelerator complex was considered with its high power PS, essentially lower beam energy, and 2 megawatt beam power. So these two beams were essentially looked at during the beam optimization process. The final, let's say, optimization yielded this type of a flux, new mu flux at the near and far detector locations for the 400 GeV baseline and the 50 GeV upgrade scenario. Essentially, as you can see, the beams that have a flatter top, if you like, in the area between 1 and roughly 6 GeV, which populates your new mu events and allows you to have slightly more events at the second oscillation maximum. So, now a little bit about the actual engineering of the beamline. So this is again within the Laguna LBNO design study. CERN had a fairly substantial amount of resources to design this beamline, and they did so. This is the sort of an arc of the SPS here. That is the Prévassin site in France. You have the proton beam line right there, the target cavern, the muon station, hadron stop, and near detector, pointing the beam in the direction of Pyesalmi. So north is that way. The beam layout underground is that one. One of the issues with a very long baseline is the incline. So we have an 18 or 1 to 5. Incline essentially, and that means that we're starting here with a it basically puts a few constraints on where you can position some of these elements, specifically the near detector, because essentially we're starting here at minus 41 meters, with the target station. The near detector is essentially located about 800 meters from the target station. So its depth is about a little bit less than 200 meters. So this is the, it's called an experimental area. That's the CERN engineers speak. It has nothing to do with gathering data at this particular point, but this is the target station. So the beam is coming in this direction, essentially. The near detector would be located down, further down, 800 meters further down. This is to show, essentially, I'm not showing the actual, let's say, target horn and reflector positioning and maintenance features, but this was studied extensively by CERN and can be consulted. The near detector area, again, you have this this fairly steep incline. So the near detector itself, which is shown here and will be the next subject of my talk, is positioned like that. This is a gas TPC, as I'll show later, followed by a magnetized ion neutrino detector. So we already saw some of these plots. I'm not going to spend too much time on these. This essentially shows the cross sections for neutrinos and antineutrinos, new mus and anti-new mus. In the area of interest, as you saw, we're looking at between 1 and 6 GeV. We have fairly large uncertainties on the cross sections. So I think the previous speaker motivated very well the need to have a near detector that can really do some, let's say, precision vertexing of your neutrino events. And so this is what we tried to demonstrate a little bit. These are simulations of a new event in liquid argon and gaseous argon, where you see essentially it's a quasi-elastic event. You see basically several protons coming out of the vertex. Or you don't see actually in the liquid argon because it's really quite difficult to disentangle these hadronic components from the vertex. Whereas in argon gas at 20 bar, you really clearly see the tracks coming out of the vertex. And so this really motivated our adoption of a gas argon TPC. So for vertexing, and then surrounded by totally active scintillator for essentially neutral particle identification within the pressure vessel. And then downstream of that, and that is, I'll show a little bit more about this, an ECAL potentially, and then a MIND. So this is the idea, to have a pressure vessel containing then argon at 20 bars with a TPC in the central region of this pressure vessel and then surrounded by plastic scintillators within the magnetic volume. And then downstream, so the beam is coming from this direction, downstream of that you have an ECAL potentially. I'm not sure this is actually required. We haven't really gone enough into our studies to determine that. But then the MIND is quite useful for really determining for doing charge identification, especially for the higher energy events. So the geometry implementation, these are just details of what was fed into the simulation environment. And then some event displays. I don't want to spend too much time, but here is a typical event, a neutrino coming in, a few protons, 1, 2, 3. You can pick up the gammas from pi zero decay, and then you have essentially a muon getting out. This momentum you can't really determine with much precision in the magnetized TPC volume because it's a high energy event in this particular case, and that's what the MIND essentially allows you to do. Okay, so why another motivation, if you like, for going for gaseous argon was essentially driven by this issue of pileup. So we looked at the drift data for in gaseous argon, and we basically came to the conclusion that, or rather, liquid argon came to the conclusion that you would probably have trouble at the near detector site with a liquid argon detector. So a few notes on the pileup issue then. I should have maybe shown before. The SPS basically comes in a double spill, two spills separated by 15 milliseconds. So you essentially assume that within a 10.5 microsecond spill, you integrate all the events in the TPC. So you really cannot avoid pileup. However, the question is, when does it really become a problem? And so we make some assumptions. So the second spill events are not affected by the first spill. So 15 milliseconds is enough to really flush out your event. But the event reconstruction is not possible if another track crosses within a certain volume of your interaction vertex. So then we had to evaluate the number of muon tracks in the TPC. And so these muons can reach the TPC from various sources, directly from the beams. This is number four here. Obviously, interactions in the TPC itself, interactions before the TPC in the rock, or interactions in the surrounding material within the detector itself, so the magnets or the scintillator. And so these are some numbers. I'm not going to go through them. I'll summarize in the next slide, but essentially these are simulations which were carried out to show that, in fact, in terms of neutrino events, we get this rate here, 0.02 muon tracks per square meter per spill. The neutrino interactions in the volume around the TPC yield this value, 5.8 or 6, roughly, muons per square meter per spill. And then you have a significant amount of tracks coming from directly from the target, so 9 muons per square meter per spill. So for every interesting event, you get 750 tracks, which you want to try and essentially ignore. Then looking at the neutrino interactions in the TPC, this is a breakdown essentially for the type of particles you get coming out of the interaction vertex, roughly 6 particles per event, and the different interaction types. So this was all charted. We, in order to try and start looking at how to optimize the plastic scintillator layers and the mind positioning around the TPC, we just looked at some of the fluxes of these secondaries exiting the TPC. And so this gives you an idea, essentially, for different categories of particles, muons, protons, charged pions, photons from pi zero decay, electrons and neutrons. So neutrons, essentially, we would have real trouble, obviously, measuring with our near detector. But the plastic scintillator then is justified to identify these photons. Okay. So now a couple of slides on the far detector. This is the far detector location at Pierre Salmi. The idea is to have essentially three caverns, two for the liquid argon detectors and one for the liquid scintillator detector that was also studied within Laguna LBNO. As I said before, these caverns obviously do not exist, but so the site investigation included drilling into these areas to determine the rock quality, if you like, the rock strength. So this is a top view of the far detector cavern. Quite a lot of engineering work actually went into the design of the cavern. This is, again, not shown in this particular slide. So we have this liquid argon with a magnetized ion detector downstream of the liquid argon. And so that mind essentially allows you to do a new mu disappearance. So the liquid argon detector parameters. So these are the technical parameters, if you like, for the two. All right. I'll try and go a little bit faster. For the two different detector configurations, then 20 kilotons and 50 kilotons. Essentially, what do we want to note here? The height. There you go, that's a good one, that's a good summary. The height basically represents the drift distance, which is 20 meters, and that's quite significant. So that's one of the technical challenges for this particular detector. So I'd like to point out now, I mentioned the industrial partnerships, which are a really important part of this design study. So several of these industrial partners really were very efficient and produced some really professional work, I would say. So for example, the membrane tank technology for the liquid argon and the liquid scintillator detectors. Sulfur gas for the, let's say, the liquid argon circuits and so on. In the UK, Technodyne for the cathode field cage and so on. Rockplan, this is for the rock engineering, and so on. So quite a lot of engineering design was done on the membrane tank, the anode, the cathode, and so on. PMT holders for the light readout underneath the cathode. The construction sequence was looked at in detail. So underground, so this is one, again, an important part of actually trying to get these detectors built underground. So that was looked at in quite a lot of detail. This is just a couple of screenshots showing the quite significant scaffolding that you need to construct the tank. Detailed risk analyses were also carried out. And the documentation, which may explain, there you go. So 4,000 pages were submitted to the EU. That's our technical manager, Guido Neutchen. And that's all available, should be available publicly. I think we're gonna probably try to publish this on the archive. I'm not too sure that's gonna happen, but there you go. But it is available publicly. So, okay. So I'm not gonna talk too much about the magnetized nitride. This is a MINOS-style detector. We're also doing a little bit of work on that, looking, for example, at the plastic scintillator technology. This is plastic from Russia in this particular case, and just reading out with silicon photomultipliers. The point here is that the light yields are quite quite high, and so this is actually a plot for 4,000 bars that we've produced, showing again light yields north of about 50 photoelectrons. So I think I'm gonna, so this is the LBNO demonstrator. I better not skip this actually. This is the R&D towards the large double phase liquid argon. So we're looking at these processes. So is that 5 minutes before the question session? All right, a minute then. So the tank insulation sequence, the charge readout, the long distance drift, purity, electronics, and so on. So this detector would be tested in a charged particle beam because we don't have any neutrino beams at CERN at the moment. CNGS was closed down. So this is basically a plot showing what a new mu looks like and what a pi minus might look like. So we can potentially use similar reconstruction algorithms and convince ourselves that we can reconstruct some of these events in liquid argon. So this is the CERN site for the LBNO demonstrator. That's an existing building. This is a planned extension which has been approved, part of this 55 million Swiss franc CERN neutrino platform. And that is the Laguna LBNO demonstrator right there, which would sit then in this area of the extension. That shows you essentially the scale of the demonstrator with respect to the 20 kiloton device. That's the first stage, if you like, before the 6x6x6 demonstrator is a smaller liquid argon detector. And the time scale for that is 1 year, so a fairly aggressive time scale. And that will already essentially allow us to look at the membrane tank technology and how to assemble some of these components onto a small scale liquid argon detector. Okay, so that's quite a lot of R&D being done right now on the anode and large electron multiplier. These are all essentially big efforts. I can't go into the detail. Here, the charge readout plane, again, is another important element in terms of tolerances on the, let's say, planarity. So to summarize, LBNO is to be located underground at Pierre Salmi, 2003, that's the baseline, 2,300 kilometers from CERN. It has truly unique scientific opportunities. This is maybe a sort of a soft sale. One experiment for all transitions, which can measure separately for neutrinos and antineutrinos in appearance and disappearance modes. The three-generation mixing patterns are tested by direct measurement as a function of energy, covering the first and the second maxima. That was always done from the beginning, essentially, always an argument we had from the very beginning for LBNO. The direct determination of mass hierarchy and test of CP violation in the leptonic scepter, that is a completely, it's a different approach, let's say, to global fits. So it really is a direct determination of those parameters. So the LBNO design study, I hope I've convinced you, has really yielded comprehensive technical data. And we are currently in the process of setting up this LBNO demonstrator soon. So that's it. Thank you.
Okay, we have time for some questions.
So this is kind of a mundane question, but I followed the LENA proposal quite carefully, and the LENA cavity was supposed to be a prolate ellipsoid affair,
right?
And slightly elliptical in the horizontal cross section, because the engineers said that there was some shear forces in the rock there, and I have seen this pill-shaped design for the liquid argon detector, and I'm wondering, different engineering firm, or how did it looks like the LENA engineers wouldn't have approved that at all.
I would say, I don't know when your information dates from, because the site investigations took place earlier this year. And so they really, as I explained, they drilled into the rock at several locations. And presumably they determined that the rock strength was good enough to have these elongated
Right, which is the hardest geometry underground, if
yeah.
they have it pill-shaped.
Yeah. But let's say the strength of the rock is a factor, it's around 270 or so megapascals. It's a factor two higher than many of the places many of the other sites we were investigating within Europe. It really is high quality rock.
So basically there was a change in the engineering because of what they found.
I have to double check that for you, but what I can, yeah. Yeah.
Anybody else?
I'm behind the times here, but is the idea that LBNO and LBNF would be built? It doesn't seem like the world can afford both.
I'm not going to answer that one. I'm here basically to show what has been happening in Europe for long baseline oscillation experiments. Sylvia will cover the physics, and that will summarize roughly what has been happening. We are already working actually with, let's say, LBN. Star, so yeah, yes, exactly. So yeah, but beyond that, I don't want to make any comments.
Resist.
I'm less hesitant. You should remember that the LBNO work study was a EU framework funded program, and those are legal contracts between your organization and the EU. And once you contract to do a particular study, you are required to do it and to finish it using the what you said you were going to do, and that was done before the European strategy process. So it is not it's not necessarily impossible that people completed a study that had already been, was already inconsistent with the strategy as set by CERN for European particle physics. That doesn't mean that anybody was doing anything inconsistent. You know, that's one of the flaws in the framework program, that scientific research is funded as if it were an industrial project, where, you know, you can say when you take the money on day one what you will deliver 3 years later. You know, that what I think we all agree that that's not how you would ideally fund scientific research. On the other hand, that is what the geniuses in Brussels have decreed, and so that's the way it's done. So you can either take the money or not, but if you take the money, you have to deliver the study.
Dave, maybe you want to remind people on what the SPS recommendations were in Europe, the latest recommendations concerning neutrino physics. The latest recommendations in Europe concerning neutrino physics.
You mean from CERN?
From the European strategy. Exactly.
Yeah, the European strategy states that neutrinos. Well, you've seen this 100 times. It's a very high priority, and we should explore cooperation with the Japanese and the Americans. So this is not inconsistent with that, to the extent that this work is also of some use to LBNF.
Okay, I have a question, but I want to return to physics. Can you go to slide 13?
Yeah.
I need a pointer.
That's a weapon.
Maybe one more back. 12, maybe.
12.
Okay. So, if I remember correctly, the second oscillation maximum is somewhere around here.
Yes, you're right. Between 1 and 2 GeV, 1 point.
So, and the yellow is for taus, right? Taus go, maybe it's the previous transparency. I'm just trying to understand, is this not the yellow, is this not the background, and the signal is the purple?
Yeah.
So here, your signal to background is not great.
No. Okay. Very good point. However, if you look at the spectral information and compare the different normal, inverted, and anti-news, I think you're focusing on this plot. You could focus on that one, or that one, or that one, where your signal to background.
Yes,
let's say if you look at it, it's.
For the mass hierarchy, you don't need to go to the second oscillation maximum. You can do the mass hierarchy at the first oscillation maximum. This is very close to what is known as the bi-magic baseline, a horrible name, right? So you can do that here. I can do that here. I'm a theorist. I can even tell you either have events in your far detector or you have beam events or not have beam events in your far detector. That's how you determine the mass hierarchy. But to get you're arguing that you get information about CP violation from the second oscillation maximum, it's pretty tough, I would say. Your signal to background is not great.
It's the spectral information that...
Wake up again. Your boss wants to talk to you.
Not yet. She's not yet my boss. She may become.
Again, you have to look at the spectral information, right?
Yes, there's...
That is the point. So indeed, if you're just looking at one value, at 1.6, 1.8 GeV, with that particular plot, so neutrinos, a normal hierarchy, there is. You're completely right. But you have to look at the spectral, the full spectral
information. If you want to convince me as a theorist, you should cut off your analysis somewhere here, and then do the analysis, including all this data,
all right,
and tell me what the difference is.
Sylvia will show it.
Yes,
she will show.
I will show that.
She will show.
Fantastic.
The analysis.
There is also one thing. When we do the analysis to determine, for example, the sensitivity to CP violation, what we do, we include information on the missing momentum for new tau events. So typically, they have much more missing PT because you have all these neutrinos which carry away energy. And so you can reduce a bit the impact of these new tau events more than what is shown there.
I look forward to that. Now let's have coffee, unless anybody else has a question. All right. Thank you very much.